This week on the Media Corps Minute Podcast, I sit down with Jeff Shupe, the president and owner of Shad Tracy Signs. We talk about acquisitions, corporate America, starting companies, sales, marketing, leadership, mentorship. It's a really good one. I want to buy a company now. You guys are going to like this. Jeff, how are we doing today, man?
Real good.
Good?
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I've been excited for this. You and I have known of each other for a while now, I think. I remember even like grabbing coffee kind of way back. You know, yeah. You were just getting into Shad Tracy, and I was just getting started with starting Media Corps, and that was really when I was on my, I need to meet everybody and anybody I can at this point.
Right.
And so I had fun. I mean, I've kind of been watching for a long time and seeing the growth. But even then, I didn't really understand, you know, some of your story. So I'm excited to dive into that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah. I was likewise. I mean, since we met for coffee, I've always paid attention to what you guys have going on, and impressive to watch your expansion and help with your signage.
Absolutely.
Your place here.
And I was literally just driving home last night, and like, you know, I kind of come around and I'm taking 52 South and just massive lit up. And I'm like, that's badass.
Yeah.
Like, I love that.
I mean, I honestly, when the first time I came out, I'm like, I don't know about putting something up there. I mean, I'm sure you remember this. Like, you can't see over that berm.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you can see it from 52, but every time I drive by, I'm like, I'm so glad.
Yep.
That's what
it turned out. So sweet.
Yeah.
So pumped about that. And kind of before we even dive into too many things, just give listeners kind of the overview of what Shad Tracy Sign is.
Sure. Well, Shad Tracy is a 45-year-old company this year.
Nice.
It started with Brad Tracy, Connie Shad, and Mike Shad. And kind of grew up in hand-painted signs of different types, and moved on to different lighting things over time, fluorescence and neon, lots and lots of neon, and then eventually LEDs and kind of bigger and bigger things as it goes.
I'm sure the technology piece has expanded what you can do quite a bit over the years.
It has, yeah. I mean, lighting technology has come so far and continues. I mean, we're now on about the third or fourth generation of LEDs. So, I mean, not only the technology, but the warranties and the length of time that they work and they don't go dim over time. And then also what you can do. I mean, even digital signs that you see at banks or churches things like that, where you can have changeable messages on it. Those have come light years.
Way past the flipping and changing of letters.
Right. And people still do buy those of signs. But that technology has gotten more crisp and, with the graphic delivery that they have on them and how you can incorporate them with different shapes and things inside a different signage. It's technology has come a long way.
So when you're before we kind of dive into things too, is like, I mean, it seems like there's a huge vertical of like what you can do in your industry, from massive pylons to, all kinds of stuff. Like how do people even like know what's capable? Are they coming to you with ideas, or just like, we want to do something, help us out? What does that usually look like?
It kind of depends on the customer. If the customer, if it's like right now, we're working on a dental office, and they hand drew something out that they thought, I mean, it's huge. It's a massive pylon that's, let's say 25 feet tall by 10 feet wide or whatever, multiple pieces of sign, a digital screen inside of it. It can come like that on a napkin if it's an individual owner. But traditionally, things of that scale usually come from an architect or a general contractor or somebody that's looking for a replacement, like a property management company.
Yep.
So they're pretty well
help us design or like re-engineer what, you know, what's going to happen. And they're coming with a little bit more of an idea.
Yeah.
You know.
And we also help a lot. I mean, because we've been around forever, we help people write their sign code. So like there's a, I'm just trying to think of an example. In Woodbury, there's a complex that we've changed out all of their signs, you know, maybe two or three times. And there's probably six humongous pylons, you know, and then they have Target and Walgreens and, you know, whoever, Lunds and Byerly's and some restaurant or something. But they all have to look the same. They all have to be the same size. They know that they'll go through the city code properly so that there won't be any hangups. They do a rebrand of the building. Well, the, what's going to come next is they'll do all the signage as well. And then they look to us to help, you know, stay inside of their design codes and, styling and things like that. So it's, you know, I didn't know it was this intricate. I didn't, you know, you look at a sign and a lot of people look at it as wayfinding, like, oh, here, oh, I'm here now. There it is. And I go into the parking lot and I go in. But there's a lot to it. I mean, it,
don't always fully appreciate what goes into just that being there. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, there's engineering of the structures that go into the ground and making sure that they don't blow over. And, you know, it's a lot bigger deal than what might be on the surface.
Yeah. So when they were starting at 45 years ago, I mean, were there many people doing this kind of stuff? Or make, I even personally now, I don't really know many people that do what you guys do.
There's, I mean, signage is a pretty big category, right? I mean, there's, you know, a yard sign, there's signs on if you're walking into a door and, you know, it's the room and maybe it has Braille on it or something, or an elevator sign, things like that. So there's such a massive, you know, signage category per se. But when you narrow down to what we do, there aren't a lot of people that, you know, design, manufacture, install, of that. We're the only one in this market per se in Southeast Minnesota that does all of those. There are people that do install only, you know, like somebody else will make it and then ship it in and then they'll install it. You know, there's a lot of companies out there that actually do that.
Not all steps.
But not every, all the design build, install type of a thing. So it's a pretty niche market.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you guys have the facility in Orinoco that you're actually fabricating a lot of that in, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we have a sales service office in Burnsville.
Okay.
So everything that we do in the Twin Cities or anywhere around the country, really, we manufacture right in Orinoco.
Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even that now, like area-wise, where do you guys serve?
Majority of our customers are Minnesota-based, kind of Southeast Minnesota and the Twin Cities area. But we'll get into rebrand type projects where they've got facilities everywhere. And yeah, over the last, I mean, 5 years that I've been involved, we've done quite a few where it leaves our area. And sometimes the scale and the size is just so massive, you know, from a number of locations perspective, like 180 locations throughout the U.S. Well, it, more than likely, we can't produce all of that in-house. So we'll find a partner like in the Southwest and the Southeast and, you know, see if they can manufacture and install all in that area. And, you know,
still kind of going through you to really help, with that full service.
Exactly. Yeah, we manage the whole project in-house. And,
That's cool.
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, so it's about an hour north of Milwaukee, over south of Green Bay.
I used to live in Ripon, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow. Ripon Good Cookies.
Ripon Good Cookies.
Yeah.
I was there for a year while Dad was transitioning his job, and we landed there for a year, and I thought this was the most random area in the country. And but then they had, Ripon Good Cookies. I'm like, what the heck is this?
Right. The fantastic little windmills.
Great. Great cookies.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why I've I guess Fond du Lac is a name that I know a little bit more just from being there. And
right.
Growing up, were your parents in business, entrepreneurship? What'd that look like?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Just one quick thing on Fond du Lac.
Yeah.
My wife gives me crap all the time because Fond du Lac, I call it 5 degrees of Fond du Lac, like one step closer than Kevin Bacon, because I know anytime I bring up Fond du Lac, for the most part in a conversation, either somebody has been there or knows somebody there or has a relative that lives there or is from there originally or some connection somehow to Fond du Lac. It's just amazing.
That's hilarious.
All over the place, all over the world, really. We run into people all the time. Yeah, it's like the center of the universe, but
that's crazy.
Yeah. I still have a lot of friends there and my family there, but yes, growing up, my mom owned an auto parts store with her two, well, my grandpa started it, and then my mom and her two brothers took it over.
Okay.
And then since then, my cousin now owns that business. So yeah, that was a part of the family. I mean, that's kind of how I grew up. Now my sister owns, she lives up on Madeline Island in Lake Superior in Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's right. It's an island right off of
it's
Bayfield.
An actual island?
Yeah, an actual
island. Oh, I've been to Bayfield.
Yeah, so you take the ferry across.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we launched in Bayfield to go to the Apostle Islands.
Yeah, it's one of the Madeline is one of the Apostle
Islands. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the biggest one, the only inhabited
one. That's legit.
One. Yeah.
Those were cool.
Yeah. I think I saw a video on you guys.
Yeah, we took the boat.
Yeah.
We took 5 guys in a boat. We just drove up, no idea what to expect or whatever. And
yeah.
We all bought wetsuits because the water's extremely cold.
You were kayaking, right?
No, we actually like took a speedboat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
We drove into some like the caves and
yeah.
Yep. It was a 19-footer and it was no prop, so I wasn't too worried about hitting something. And
right.
That was a blast though.
Yeah.
It's a really pretty area.
Oh yeah, the islands up there are
it's
awesome.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I just wish the water was warmer. So
I know.
Swim.
Yeah, you can start swimming in about mid-August.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's a cold plunge.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, my sister owns, she's got a lot going on up there. She bought a restaurant originally, which is since she kind of leases that side of it out, but then runs a catering company out of there. Then she bought the motel that was right next door, so it's a little bit of a bed and breakfast, I guess. And then most recently, she bought one of the grocery stores that are on the island. And they own a farm, too, and they have people that come out to the farm. And
she's trying to take over the town or what?
Yeah, she's got a lot going on, for sure. Yeah, it's fun to watch.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and we've, you know, I love going up there and talking business with her and whatnot. And then my brother, who also lives on the island, owns the one of two septic businesses
because
it's all septic systems. There's no public.
I suppose they didn't. Yeah.
You know, utilities and things like that.
That's stuff I'd never think about, but it's just like you have to have it. You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean,
how did they land on the same island?
My brother moved up to Washburn area originally with his wife, and then they had kids on the mainland, and then eventually he had a portable sawmill company, so he had horses and everything that would drag trees out. If you bought a 5-acre lot and you wanted to put up a house or whatever, he would come and do the selective cutting to get the driveway in there and then get the where the house plot was going to go, and then he would take the wood right on site and mill it into boards.
Dang.
And then sometimes I don't know how he kiln dried anything in that regard, but a lot of the wood would go back into making the house or a garage or whatever. So eventually a lot of his work started being on the island, so then he would stay out on the island because of all of his equipment.
Okay.
He'd bring a camper out there and, you know, just do a job and then go job to job. And eventually him and his wife were like, why don't we just buy a place out here? And yeah, they ended up moving onto the island.
Yeah.
And then he had a sawmill and a fixed mill place with kilns. And his wife was a potter, so she did pottery and things like that. So yeah, that's
so it's like in your blood, like business and entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. And I mean, that's one side of it. The other side is I've had some amazing business mentors throughout my life. my first job out of school was I worked for Kodak, all the overnight photo finishing.
This is college?
Right after college.
Okay.
Yeah, right after college. I the old days where you'd take the film out of a camera and put it into an envelope and drop it into a box.
Yeah, no idea.
And then the next day it would show up and there was pictures in that envelope. It would come to us. And
so you like developed them and sent them? Okay.
And it was all overnight. So yeah, my first job out of college was night shift as a production supervisor. And
so what'd you go to college for then?
I started in graphic design, but one of the teachers told me I was awful, basically. So I ended up...
Don't do that.
Yeah, like your perspective is off and whatever else, you basically suck. So I moved to the business side of commercial printing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a little bit parallels what I do right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, college to me was never... It was only about the piece of paper and... Yeah. Never the education. It was,
was it you or your like parents that were pushing for it then?
It was kind of the school I went to. It was kind of just assumed in high school that everybody went to college and you didn't really, you know, there was nobody went into trades and mm-hmm. I mean, people did, but majority of people, you went to school and that's just kind of what you did, mm-hmm. Which was fine. Yeah. You know, I mean, I definitely learned life skills, you know, the work hard and party hard and, you know, balance and freedom and how to manage the whole thing.
There's a lot of soft skills too that you learn in college just with people and the social setting of it and
I mean, I worked regular jobs all throughout just to make money and whatnot, but I'm definitely a different dad regarding if you need to go to school or not, you know, relevant to the world and the way that it is right now.
Yeah.
I'm 100% not pushing college. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I feel like I'm talking my son, who's a senior right now, out of college.
Yeah.
To try to get a different path. But
what's he interested in?
Well, he's going to go to Mankato to be a pilot. So,
okay.
Yeah.
There's pilots, need for pilots for sure.
Major need. Yeah, which we're excited about. I mean, he's starting his private pilot's license right now.
That's
which
sick.
Is pretty cool. I mean, if you're still in high school doing that, I think it's amazing. You know, I don't know that I was mature at that age enough to think like I could fly a plane, but mm-hmm.
That scare you at all?
What's that?
Does it scare you at all? He's flying around?
No, he's got quite a few friends that are already almost all the way to their pilot license and they're going to go to Mankato together and be in this program. But yeah, I mean, if it were up to me, I would just say there's flight schools that you can just go straight to flight school.
Yep.
You don't worry about the college side of it. You don't take all the, you know, the histories and the Englishes and the stuff again, you know, he doesn't like it. And I don't, you know, I'm like, I'm with you. You're going to be in extended high school for a little while there until you, you know, get into your major. But the good thing with the aviation program is because there's so much technical stuff that you have to do, they start you doing it right away as a freshman. Mm-hmm. So I guess the bad side is that strings out all the generals all the way into your senior year, which you don't just knock them all out and then mm-hmm. move on to your concentration, you know, after that. So it's a give and take there. But from a keep you interested perspective,
kind of always doing it.
Might help, at least I'm hoping. But there's a lot of avenues for just getting straight into flight school, and it's already well known mm-hmm. that you don't have to go, you know, get a college education if you want to be a pilot. You can just get into flying. Mm-hmm. So,
that's a fun industry for sure. I mean, all of our guys that shoot are drone certified, part 107. And it was interesting, even when I took that course, it was nothing about drones. It was all about being a pilot.
Right, right.
And I was like, what in the world is this? Like, I'm flying a drone. Why do I need to know maps and METARs and the weather? And I was just, like, blown away. And the point was, so you respect airspace and what pilots are going through, and you understand what's going on in the air. And it's like, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
But it was really interesting because when I took my test, you know, I was at the airport and somewhere because Rochester didn't have it at the moment. And though I took the test, I scored really well, and I asked the instructor, I'm like, dude, this was nothing about drones. Like, what would it take for me to actually become a pilot? And he's like, well, pretty much the same test, one more module, and then you'd have to start your hours flying. And I'm like, what the heck? I could have just taken this extra thing and then started flying. I mean, granted, that's only it's a limited license to fly. I mean, sports license, and yeah, there's plenty of tiers, but
right.
It was just really interesting. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, you could probably get into this and do some sport flying, and
yeah.
You know, it's no instruments, and it's, you know, no night flying, but
right.
To be able to get in a plane and fly, and that's kind of cool. We've been actually looking into planes a lot more.
Yeah.
Just as like a viable option in the next 3 years.
Sure.
Just because we do so much traveling, it's like to have 2-3 guys, a ton of equipment, multiple nights in a hotel, rental cars.
Mm-hmm.
For us to have a prop plane, a 6-seater, and to get around, it's way less money for our clients to pay for travel if they're just paying for fuel or something like that.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, that's kind of a cool idea. So now I found a guy that he sells Cessna planes, and we're going to chat, and I'm just going to learn more about what that actually costs, so I have an accurate idea to plan either for or not. I've just loved that idea because there was a time where I lost a $35,000 project in Michigan. It's for one of like the top 10 biggest concrete contractors in like the world. And they loved it. They loved the videos we made. They loved, you know, chatting and the experience. And it ultimately came down to not doing it because not even paying for travel, but it was the inconvenience of having to rebook things if weather permitted.
Sure.
And wasn't able to happen. So it was like, you know, from that day on, I was like, man, like, it'd be really cool to say, don't worry about that. We'll just fly our plane a different day.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, and when you really explore the aviation field, it's so broad. You can do so many different things in that. So, yeah, I mean, we're excited for him. I mean, he's excited. He's a very hands-on, you know, individual anyways, and he gets technology, and mm-hmm. He's somewhat of a safe driver, so that helps a lot. He's
gives you confidence.
Yeah, he's cautious, and he's got really good, you know, kind of like awareness when he's in a, he's been driving, we have a side-by-side that
nice.
We've had for, I don't know how old he was when we got it, I guess 15 or 14, so he's been driving that forever, so moving into driving, same with our daughter. Moving into driving cars wasn't that big of a leap.
Yep.
So I would highly recommend that when you have kids.
Get a side by side.
Side by side first. See. And then, or anything for that matter.
Golf cart.
Yep. My in-laws have a golf cart that started when they were real young. They just, you know, when you get into something bigger, you know, especially you realize that is you, this entire thing is you. Yeah. It's not just me individually sitting here. I have to worry about that front corner, and I have to worry about this back corner. And, mm-hmm. you know, you just think a little bit differently. So if they can learn that younger, honestly, going through the hours and stuff like that was more of a pain, you know, to do it because both kids were pretty good drivers at that point. So,
yeah.
But that'll hopefully transition to him into being a pilot. And I mean,
that'll be cool.
They're pretty strict in their training relevant to checklists and, you know, all that kind of stuff too. So once you build that memory of this is how things are done, mm-hmm. you know, you don't skip things and mm-hmm. cut corners. So,
yeah, well, I like that. So jumping back, I mean, so you're out of college, you're working at Kodak, and I mean, how long are you there? Are you dabbling in other things while you're doing it, or what does that kind of look like timeline wise?
Yeah, so I was there for 5 years, and I know what we were talking about earlier too with the mentor thing. I had a general manager there that was just phenomenal. I mean, he was a very hard-nosed individual, but just an unbelievable trainer, you know, mentor type of a thing. And he always sought kids coming out of college so that he could kind of train them up. But I learned just a ton, not only from how to supervise and manage people, but the manufacturing process itself. And we had really tight deadlines. I mean, we would get in 30,000 rolls of film in a night, and they have to be in that box, or in at least the pouch, ready to go back by 9 in the next morning, you know. Dang. I mean, it was fast and furious. We were moving people around, and it was a great training ground from a production standpoint to be able to do that. But yeah, he was very transparent, shared a ton about financials and productivity and, you know, a lot of metrics and key things that were necessary, relevant to, you know, yes, we were one of 52 plants throughout the country, but he ran it like it was his own, and he really taught us how to do that. So that was great. But then about 4 years into it, obviously digital photography came along, and film started to really go down. But because we were such a top-performing plant, we went from 50 to 4 plants in our fourth year of being there.
50 to 4.
Yeah, so we were getting stuff coming from, you know, so our volume actually went up because we were consolidating plants while they were closing down the rest of
it. Did the plant get bigger, or they're just...
No, just more volume.
More volume.
Yeah, yep. So... you know, that was also a great learning experience. But towards the end, once we kind of knew that the plant was going to shut down, I mean, we had a little time. A friend of mine that was another production supervisor there and I started a golf business that was 100% on the driving range. So basically a corporate event that you'd go to where, you know, you have closest to the pin and longest drive and longest putt and, things like that, and you had a charity involved and all that. I mean, you've been to, you know, a ton of those. We took that entire concept and put it onto a driving range. So we didn't have to disrupt their whole thing. We would
the whole course for the day.
Yeah, the whole course for the day. We would just have people come buy a buck a ball, and a certain amount of those sales would go to a charity that we were affiliated with. But yeah, we took out all the insurance policies for, you know, a car sponsor and you know, for the hole-in-one competition. And I mean, all of it. And, it was fun. I mean, would I call it a business? Probably not. I mean, it was, a fun dabble.
It sounds like a fun, like, you know, that would have been fun to do though.
Yeah. We didn't have to spend money out of our own pocket. You know, we would get sponsorship dollars, and then the course would basically let us there for free. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as we only occupied a certain amount on the driving range and then bought a certain amount of food or whatever. But usually people that came bought a ton of food and they would set up like a stand or whatever. But that was fun. It was just a fun thing to be a part of.
Absolutely.
And eventually we just stopped doing that. And then a high school friend and I were always kind of writing business plans behind the scenes. And we wrote this business plan for this concept for mobile billboards. So you would take full color graphics and put them on a semi truck. Mm-hmm. And we would team up with certain fleets, you know, like we had this big plan of calling all these fleets, because he worked for C.H. Robinson at the time and he knew a whole bunch of truck drivers.
Yep.
And, basically empty real estate that we could put graphics on.
Absolutely.
And we teamed up, we got a, with 3M, they had this whole machine that they were patenting where you would actually apply the graphics. It was almost like a fork truck that would apply a graphic to a semi, and they were going to sell them to graphics companies or whatever with their vinyl that they, you know, produce a lot of 3M vinyl. So we got this relationship going, and we were working through this guy back from Fond du Lac who was kind of a big business guy. And eventually he was like, hey, that's a really cool idea, but I've been investing in Segway for 10 years now, and it's coming out. Do you guys want to sell Segways for me? And we're like, yes, you know. I mean, once the hype started coming out about
the... Big switch, though, there.
A big switch, yeah. But this will come full circle. So... as you know, I mean, nobody was buying Segways. We did end up selling, you know, a few to travel companies or tourist type things like Stone Arch Bridge in Minneapolis and a couple other ones around the area.
Why do you think they didn't take off?
I don't know.
They're fun.
They are a lot of fun.
I've rented them twice. Like, I mean, it was years ago, but
yeah,
just renting them and driving around in Florida or something. I mean,
right.
I had a blast on them.
Yeah, they're cool. I honestly don't know why. I mean, and even now you still don't, like, you can buy the little ones. And I mean, yeah. I think for a long time you could buy them at Costco or whatever. I mean, they just haven't taken off, and they've a lot of different competitors or whatever that have come out with them over time.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, we would zip, I mean, everywhere. We were on those things nonstop. So then what we ended up doing, because we weren't really selling them, we had to buy our own machines in order to even sell them for this guy. He's okay. Like, you can get in, but you got to buy your own machine.
Yeah.
So we bought our own machines, and eventually we came up with this concept where we put like a windshield on the front and made it almost look like a chariot type of a thing.
Yep.
And then we put full color graphics on that. And then our goal was to sell it to ad agencies for street level advertising at different events or whatever. So once we got that made, we hit the streets. I mean, we were, this is all still while I'm working nights as well, you know, so during the day we would ideate, you know, then I would sleep for a few hours and then, you know, go back to work or whatever, come back from work. It was before his work. It was after mine.
Wow.
Or I would meet him for lunch and we would, you know, come up with this concept. So then eventually I worked 410s at Kodak. My days off, we would do sales trips. So like we'd fly to Chicago or New York or Milwaukee, or we'd just go Minneapolis. And basically we would just roll in on the machines into an ad agency. This is our whole strategy. I mean, we never even call them, never even email them. We would just roll in with full colored graphics with suits on. And sell this concept to them. It was amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, where else could you show up? And not only was the gatekeeper, you know, not only was she not telling us, hey, you know, no, they're not available, she was rounding people up around the building. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was like, you have to see this, you have to see this, you have to see this.
That's fantastic.
Before you know, I mean, people are doing circles around their offices and we would be there for hours. Then we just go on to the next one. And yeah, we did it in Chicago. We did it in New York. And we started getting more and more traction and started kind of landing some gigs. Well, we didn't know that there was a guy out of, there was a group out of Kansas City that was doing this as well. Mm. But what we found out was they were affiliated with this guy in Canada that patented the shield. So that guy reached out and he's like, hey, you guys can't be doing this, you know? And we were like, yeah, whatever, you know, right. young and dumb,
yeah.
Just keep going. Well, eventually the guys out of Kansas City were like, you guys should pay attention because this guy's going to come after you if you keep on going. So we ended up saying, all right, that's fine. Well, can we join forces with you then? Mm-hmm. So we signed an agreement. We could use his shields. We teamed up with the guys out of Kansas City, had an agreement there. So then we started kind of selling things together, and then we were doing events in Kansas City and Boston and, I mean, all over the place, California,
that's
New
wild.
York, in this street-level advertising type stuff. And eventually we found out this company that he asked us all to come out there and help them produce this event for them. We found out that they were actually our client. Like, we were the sales arm and they were the business side. We already had met with them way back, you know, this was after our agreement. So then we were like, huh, I wonder how many other jobs, you know, and they weren't paying us as a commission salesperson. They were just paying us to help put the event on. So we started asking more questions. Eventually we found out that they landed other jobs as a result of our sales efforts that they never even told us about. So a friend of ours from college was an attorney, and we're like, what should we do here? And yeah, so eventually we ended up suing them for, you know, lost wages or whatever. And my buddy that I was in it with was working on this humongous Target deal. And he's like, I'm just going to keep going, you know, and doing it. I'm like, that's fine. You can continue with the business. My first kid was on the way. I'm like, I'm moving on, you know. So I ended up getting out of the whole deal and, yeah, ended up going to work at a packaging company, which has nothing to do with any of that crap.
just for something stable at the time?
Pretty much. A friend of mine, another friend of mine from college, sold to this company. And I needed work and, you know, knew I needed something somewhat stable.
Yeah.
And my wife was gracious enough to live with me for a little over a year trying to pursue this other business and not really bringing in a lot of income. Everything we brought in, we put back in type of a thing. So I'm like, all right, I got to support the family here. So
where was that located at?
That was in Hopkins.
Okay.
So, yeah, a company called Shippers Supply. Which is a packaging distribution company up there. But yeah, I worked for them for almost 13 years after that. I started in sales and then eventually moved in to be the sales manager and then started a marketing department, was on the leadership team. I mean, relevant to going back to the mentorship thing and the leader or the what I
that
learned
really helped with the
that guy his name's Dave Kirsch. He's one of the most generous transparent teachers, you know, that you'll ever know. And he was, you know, still to this day, I mean, I now owning a business, I go back to him and ask him business questions all
That's
the time.
Great.
So yeah, he's phenomenal. So yeah.
So most, I mean, there's a small percentage of people, obviously, that get into business, that, you know, run them, that start them. There's not a ton of people. I mean, well, I guess there's even less that, like, do the acquisition route. I mean, that's, to me, that's even, like, I mean, that's, it's even more to, like, figure out and know and, I mean, risky. So knowing that was kind of the route, I mean, how did you even, like, get into that?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you as a startup person say that, because in my mind, I think a startup, and I have one inside of my own company right now, I think a startup is way harder than an acquisition. You know, mainly because I guess I'll back up to my story a little bit and then I can weave this in, but when I left Shippers, I didn't know if I wanted, well, I guess back up a little bit before that. I went to a career coach while I was still at Shippers. And, you know, I basically said, I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
Yep.
You know, can you help me narrow down something to, you know,
how old are you at
succeed? How old was I? That was when I went to the career coach, I think I was like 41.
Okay.
So, yeah, and she did an amazing job of, you know, basically narrowing down where I get my energy. If you really wanted to put a name on what it is, it's it's definitely getting energy and where I feel like I'm the
fills
happiest.
Your cup. Yeah.
And exactly, fills my cup up, and it's not, doesn't take away and suck the life out of me type of a thing.
Yeah.
And what it really came down to was strategy. And that was really the main part of it. And she really exposed my thinking to that a lot of these larger companies, like the Best Buys of the world and Land O'Lakes and I don't know, there was a number of other ones, private equity firms, things like that. They have strategy departments. So they have people that are, you know, they're not looking at their toes in the day-to-day. They're looking at the horizon 100%. You know, things that just won't even come about for a year, two, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, that's exactly where I want to be. So when I got done with Shippers, I said, all right, I have two paths here that I can take. I can either go buy a business or I can find these strategy departments that I can go, you know, lend a hand in doing that. Well, going back to the education thing, I was naive to the fact to think like, I mean, kind of, I feel like I had a experience-based MBA because I went through it. I was in the trenches. I managed a P&L. I acquired businesses. I had, you know, great mentors and teachers. I made tons of mistakes, you know, learned from them. In order to even interview at these companies relevant to the strategy department in them, you had to have an MBA. I mean, they didn't even look at you, didn't even talk to you. Yeah. So I made it into the actual hire people that hired just through my networking of knowing people inside of those companies. And, you know, they're like, I'll get you in front of them, but I know how this company operates and you just won't get there. You know, you just won't. And I'm like, really? You would rather have a kid that went straight to college and went right to B school and then came in with zero experience being in front of this, you know, big company managing all these strategies and dollars, that somebody that has the scars, you know, that has been doing it, you know, forever. Not that I've done it at scale or, you know, majorly, but if it was me on the other side of that table, I would 100% interview these people at least play around over here to see if there's a needle in the haystack. But I want somebody that's been through the trenches, you know, that
I mean, a lot of people are hiring like that even to this day now.
It's for
like,
sure.
You know, that's great, but I know this guy has done this and done it to a certain level, and that's very valuable, because I mean, you can learn a lot, but until you're applying it, it's like, it's way different.
Yeah.
You gotta live it. You gotta fail. You gotta learn.
Exactly.
Way different.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I guess disturbing would be the best way to go. You know, like, I mean, they're privately held companies, the most, you know, so I was like, this is a very dangerous thing that you're doing here relevant to your own company. You know, it doesn't seem practical to me to go about the way that you're doing it. You're paying all these inflated salaries for people that don't have experience at all. I mean, that's my thinking anyways. But anyways, so the strategy thing, it was like, all right, that's not an option.
No.
You know, I'm not doing that. But owning your own business, there's 100% strategy in there among all the other things, obviously. So I started meeting with business brokers.
So you weren't thinking start a business. You were like, I'm going to buy a business.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, I already had processed that. I mean, even before, I mean, I always had ideas of starting a business while I was working, you know, a full-time job. And it just didn't seem to add up to me. And then when the strategy thing came about, you know, she had recommended you should really, you know, think about buying a business because there's all kinds of people retiring. And then I started meeting. I mean, I met with a friend of mine who's a business banker at Wells Fargo. I'm like, does this happen a lot? And he's like, happens all the time.
Like, I didn't even know.
Okay. Yeah. So the more people I started talking with, it just became more clear, you know, to do it. So. Yeah, I started networking with business brokers. One of the first ones I met with was Jacob Peterson. Mm. He's local here, Murphy Business Consulting, and he had just listed Chad Tracy for sale. Mm. So I met with him and got everything. I mean, but that was like one of the first ones. So I'm like, I can't make a decision on one.
Yeah,
you know. So I ended up getting referred to a number of other business brokers in the cities and. Told them what my criteria was. I had, I wanted a manufacturing company. I wanted it to be in somewhat of a legacy type business, something that's going to be around, you know, nothing too advanced on the, you know, the bleeding edge of technology or nothing that I can see that's going to be completely outdated in a short amount of time. I wanted it to be somewhat outdated and, it, not only in its business itself, but in the industry as well, so that I could bring innovation and modernization to it. I wanted it to be something where it had consistent revenue year over year over year, meaning if they could survive with not having a great website or doing all the marketing stuff that I knew how, or the proactive selling type things that I knew how to do. And they just kept on going and going and going. At the very least, I could just go in there and be flat, right? I could not screw anything up type of a thing. Mm-hmm. So I looked at all kinds of businesses. I looked at liquor stores or, you know, I didn't really want anything in retail or restaurant, but I had them presented just because I wanted to understand the numbers and what was behind it. There was a couple of small manufacturing companies. One was a vape company that actually stuffed their own cartridges with vape and everything, and I just didn't necessarily agree with that, that I wanted to do as a long-term thing.
Yeah.
It was profitable, and they had a good business, but I just didn't go into what I wanted to do. But yeah, I looked at probably 15 or 20 different businesses in about a 2-week period. I mean, granted, I quit at Shippers. I mean, I had nothing. Yeah. So I was fast and furious networking and meeting with people. And, you know, so beginning of May in 18, and by like the end of May, I had met with Jacob a couple of times, and we were, you know, kind of on and off. You know, another thing was trying to figure out who you need on your team. Like, who do you need in your stable? Well, you need a banker, obviously, somebody to do loans, which is usually, you know, kind of connected to the same bank. You need a good lawyer, and you need a good accountant. Mm-hmm. And I already had an accountant, and from there is when I got my attorney, who ironically was the one that wrote the business contract for when I was back in the Segway business many years earlier, yeah. I got referred back to him. And then my banker, I already had two, who was my buddy that I went in with, and then he introduced me to his loan guy. But yeah, getting kind of them, and then the nice thing, and I would highly recommend people do this if you're ever considering buying a business, is get a network of other business owners. I mean, anyone. It could be a distant uncle or a friend of a friend who happens to own a business. But when you start looking at businesses, you sign an NDA, of course, because they don't want you to share their information. But yep. They give you all the financials. They give you tax returns that you can see it, you know, the picture of potentially what it is currently, and a little bit of history. But ask to meet with those people. Ask anyone. Get in front of people that you know and trust or that have a little bit of experience, because they want to help you. They truly, truly want to help. And I was fortunate enough to, like I was mentioning, the owner of Shippers, I met with him right away, you know, and said, here's what I'm looking at. You see any, you know, shoot holes in it? Give me any red flags. He referred me to a couple other business guys. They looked at it. I mean, again, this is a very condensed time frame, and eventually I'm like, all right, I want to do it. How do we do it? You know, let's do it. So yeah, we wrote an offer, and then essentially from there you go into what's called due diligence, which basically you deep dive into the financials and all the different aspects of it, and hey, this doesn't make sense, or why did you do it that way, or show me your customer base and why, and the people, you know, inside of it, because at some point those former owners are not going to be there, you know, so now it's going to be you and your new employees, and you really have to understand and craft how that's going to look post sale. And I didn't know anything. I mean, I did from the past acquisitions that we did with the old company. So I guess I had a little bit of knowledge relevant to that, but there's a lot to navigate there. There's, you know, assets, like how good is a boom truck? I don't know. I mean, I don't know an independent boom truck fixer guy that I can, check this out for me and give me an assessment on. They're saying it's worth $25,000. Is it worth 25 or is it worth $5,000?
You see something happening to this. And,
And some of those were expensive lessons. I mean, post sale that I didn't know what I didn't know, and I didn't pay enough attention to it. The accuracy of the inventory that they're telling you that you're buying $250,000 of inventory. Do I know that this is good or not, or it's still use or not? I had no idea. You know, so then you get in there and you find out a certain percentage of it is obsolete. Mm-hmm. Oh, we haven't used that in 10 years. You ask the people that work there, I haven't used that in 10 years. Oh, I paid X dollars for this. Yeah, now it's worth nothing. You know, so there's so many things that you definitely have to learn and understand. And I mean, you can't possibly do it yourself.
Right. Well, having that core team that you're talking about too, it definitely helps. And then,
right.
But the network of other owners and people like that that can assist and help has got to be huge.
Yeah. 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 I mean, an accountant, an attorney, maybe not a banker or a loan officer, but you're paying the accountant and attorney. So every time you go back to them and say, look at this, you're paying for that advice.
It's on the clock.
Yeah. Versus if you go to a business owner, you know, can I buy you a cup of coffee or can we have lunch together? It's sufficient enough that because they just truly want to help. And I would 100% recommend that people do that if they get into that.
That's super cool because, like, I didn't know that that was as big of a thing that, especially, like, not having, like, you know, started one and then you're operating this and, like, oh, I'm going to, like, you know, acquire another company or... But just kind of like out of the gate, like a lot of people do that. I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Yeah.
I guess the more now that I've learned running this company and just reading and listening. And I mean, like, there was something that said, you know, real estate makes the most millionaires like in the world. You know, it's just what it is. But then, like, I saw something on like, but acquisitions makes the most billionaires.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's just like that interesting idea of like, you know, if one jumps to real estate as an investing tool and a, you know, a long-term tool, and it's a good play. It's, you know, relatively safe. I mean, you can still jack it up pretty good. But the acquisition side started like getting me excited, you know, and not really now, you know, because I love what we're doing. And I've also heard guys go, don't put all your eggs in one basket. But then when you dive deep, it's like, well, the guys that did, you know, progress their companies extremely fast and were just like, I'm freaking all in for this. And granted, it might be a little more riskier, but like I can build this way faster if I'm completely 100% into this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have big plans for MediaCorp, and we'll see how that continues to grow. But like the idea of like acquisitions, you know, I think will always be something that I'm currently learning more and more about, because I also see it as like some of the things that we're really good at with marketing and content creation and sales, and then now learning some of the back end business stuff of what it takes to operate, manage, set things up. I'm like, dude, I would crush at like buying businesses that are just, yeah, you know, we're just doing our thing, and
yeah,
it's kind of just here. You know, it's not really dying, it's not really growing. Maybe it's dying slowly, but like, man, if you got like a great product and a great team, it's like if you can like modernize and bring sales and marketing to that, and then, you know, sell it in 5 years or something like that. Like,
right?
I think that's sweet, and I feel like we're equipping ourselves now to be able to do that, or even do it with a team, you know, let's say of people that are kind of in the same boat or have different skill sets. But I see MediaCorp almost being something that can like feed into that down the road as, you know, we buy and sell companies or something like that and always have this going on, but this kind of helps do those.
Yeah.
I don't know. That gets me excited. And
yeah, the biggest thing I think that from an acquisition entrepreneurship perspective is not getting too far from your core. Mm-hmm. That's what they always say, you know, is if you're looking at something and it seems like it's cool and fun, that's great, but I know nothing about it. Now it's taking a portion of your mind share and dedicating it to that, where it's not going to be with the core anymore. Mm-hmm. If it's still in the core or rightly, you know, surrounding a core, I mean, then you can be intentional about, yep, I'm going to go after this. I'm going to seek out this business, even if they have no intention of selling whatsoever. I mean, like even with Jacob now, I'll find, I'm looking, you know, so I'll find a business that I know fits us very, very well. And maybe it's just different geography than where we are right now. And I'm like, you go pursue. Here's all the information, you know, and there's a lot of opportunity there, because most business owners don't want their business to show that it's less value. They think it's worth millions and millions and millions. At the end of the day, it just comes down to the numbers. What is somebody going to actually pay for your business? Yep. So if me as the acquirer tells the seller that their business isn't worth what they think it is, you immediately put up bad, you know, I would never sell to that guy, even though down the road they might sell at the price or something close to the price that you were suggesting. They hate you for telling you that.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you send an expert in who does this for a living,
right,
he can call their baby ugly and really put data around it,
right,
and really talk them into you know, the right mindset, if you will. And now you can come in as, hey, you know, I mean, the nice thing too, and I can't say enough good things about Jacob, is from a business broker perspective, the business brokers get a really, really bad name, especially with certain agencies, which I won't say any names, but you can feel that they just want to sell. They just want to sell, sell, sell. And most business brokers are representing the seller only. That's where they get paid their commission. Jacob has always, I mean, even in the Shad Tracy sale, always done it where he understands it's a bridge. It's a bridge between the seller and the buyer. And that seller is going to be needed by the buyer.
Absolutely.
After the sale is done, in order for it to be a successful thing. And then, you know, fast forward, if that buyer wants to acquire again, they're going to go back to him, you know. So he fully understands what's necessary to make it a successful, you know, business relationship going forward.
Kind of navigate between both.
And, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Because I meet with people all the time that are wanting to do what I did. They've been in corporate America and I'm done with this. You know, I want to move on. I want to explore. I'm looking at this type of business. What do you recommend? And I usually nothing concerned with the business itself that they're looking at, aside from the numbers that I can help with. But generally speaking, I'm like, find a broker that if this type of broker has it for sale, I would get your own representation and see if there can be a split commission or something, because it makes it go way smoother if you have somebody that is truly an advocate for both sides.
In your corner and can help. And
We acquired another business, actually my wife's uncle, which is the business is making a laminating machine, or actually a vinyl application machine for the road sign industry is basically it. So any road sign, a stop sign, a yield sign, the big ones that are, you know, up above the highways, things like that. All of that is done usually using equipment that smooths the vinyl right onto the aluminum sign blank that comes in. So we make these machines. It's a very small, tiny little niche company that we acquired in 2021 to do that. But our main customer is all government, you know, like counties or cities or municipalities or prisons or Coast Guard or, you know, whatever. It's all, usually there are sign shops that buy it that do that type of thing, but the majority of it is a government thing. But anyways, from an acquisition standpoint, because it was my wife's uncle too, I asked Jacob, I'm like, will you come in on this to truly build the bridge? You know, I want him to retire and feel good about what he has as an asset. I want me to not pay too much so that my loan on the backside can be sustained by the business itself.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about, you know, that I got a raw deal. And yeah, he loved it. He loved the process. I loved the process, and you know, we moved on. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've also heard, you know, when you were saying to the point of like, some people kind of get out of their lane and they'll try something else because, hey, I've been very successful at this, but, you know,
I can do anything.
I feel like I can do this. And then the minute they do, it falls apart and they're like, what the heck? You know, you go back into what you're, you know, normally in and specialized in. It's like, now you're very successful in it again. It's like, what's going on, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to dive in and know. Because, like, what you're going to know and be an expert in is always going to be, like, you know, that core piece of you, you know. But I guess, like, where I think, you know, how much – I guess that's where, like, the group comes into play, you know. Like,
right.
Do I have to be an expert at this industry? Not necessarily if I have someone that technically is or has, you know. And then can I plug in – you know, the sales and marketing and industry knowledge that we have and the resources that can come into it.
Yep.
Still, because, like, yeah, I don't want to act like I know how to operate, you know, a manufacturing company or, you know, whatever it is, you know.
Right.
But can you put that almost, you know, team that's going, like, our plan is to buy this, to sell this in X amount of years
sure.
for, you know, that.
Yep.
I think that'd be something cool down the road.
I think about other people's business a lot. Like, man, what could they do that would help them as a business and or, you know, buy this or bolt this on or add this as a service?
Yeah.
I honestly think for you guys, because you have such a powerful visual for people to utilize, and I think you said it in I forget the terminology everybody's using now, brand anthem, coming out this year in one of your posts about being more than just a corporate video company, you know, with the marketing and things like that. And you said that earlier too. We are always, you know, myself and Mike, we're always looking to try to find tools that will help us marketing related. And I feel that we've investigated social media companies, I mean, all of them, you know, and it used to be, you know, you just turn over your money and it's a monthly $3,500 or $5,000 or whatever, and they just keep on pumping out content and things like that. I think there's a major disruption coming with AI and a lot of the tools that are out there. The problem is that everyone has to learn, like, which tools can I use and how many tools do I want to learn to try to get what I do. I think you guys would have a great service of aggregating those tools to say, what are you looking? You can still be a social media agency and you can still charge a subscription, which is nice because it's an ongoing revenue type thing, but charge $200 a month. And all you're doing for $200 a month is the same thing for everybody. You're basically distilling all the tools that are coming about and telling them, hey, this new one's coming, and I know you're really into LinkedIn and how to do LinkedIn ads or whatever. Here it is, and here's the best tutorial to do. You don't even necessarily have to make the training or the tutorials on them, because usually that company has it themselves. But basically boiling down,
helping navigate almost.
Yeah, being a navigator for people that want to do it in-house.
Yeah.
You know, coupled up with what you're already doing.
Right.
As an educational resource to do it. Because, and not only
there,
that, but
there is a lot that people can do internally.
Totally.
You know, that they just don't know even what to do or where to start.
They're scared of it, too.
Yeah.
You know, especially with all the stuff coming out. I mean, it's, you know, we'll watch a TikTok video or something. Like last night, in fact, me and Mike were talking about target audiences inside of LinkedIn and LinkedIn ads and things like that. We've been talking about that a lot this year. But on TikTok, there was a woman that was on there that I hadn't followed before. And she basically was talking about a method to ask ChatGPT this series of questions, like specific prompts that you can ask that will give you the recipe for what to play, how to place your ads and what to place them for relevant to your specific industry. So I watched it and then I did it in ChatGPT, and I didn't tell Mike about this. And then this morning I did the whole thing. I sent it to him with the woman's, you know, one video, and he's like, this is exactly what we've been talking about. I mean, it's all there, right? It's all out there.
Yeah.
But having it be narrowed down and potentially delivered, you know, to you on a silver platter so they don't have to do the research.
Yeah.
You're still kind of like an agency or a marketing assist, but you're at the front edge of saying this one's worthless or this has big aspects that you can use, but I would only use it if you're focusing on Instagram or, you know, if you're into TikTok, I would 100% number one, follow these two people. But secondly, here's the tools that they use and here are the videos on how they use them. I mean, if I was delivered that information, I'd be like, thank you for taking the shortcut.
Yeah.
And I would watch it and then act on it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think there's so much room for help with that, because if you also think about people's marketing departments inside of their, how many people are in there? Mm-hmm. One, and maybe half, and the other half, they're the receptionist or something like that.
Yep.
You know, they're not big.
A lot. Yeah.
And they don't necessarily know how to go or what to do. And they might be avid TikTok watchers or whatever in their spare time, but they're like, man, we should really do something like that.
Right.
And then they just don't. You know, because they just don't know where to go. So, yeah, I thought of you guys relevant to that, you know, concept.
Yeah. I mean, it could also be like a twofold, because, I mean, obviously we have the video services that we do. That,
plus the content, yeah.
You know, and the content, then you could have like almost like the, well, if you don't have the budget for this, you know, here's this
totally.
To do it yourself. Because we always say, like, there's always a time and a place and a need for you to have somebody at house or be doing it yourself or doing this or that, because it's not feasible for us to do everything. But there's also key, you know, videos and times where I think this is why you would bring us in to do these kinds of things.
100%.
But to have kind of both options, because we've had people that are like, man, like, if you could almost have like an intro option or, you know, something that that gets us into it without being the full-blown, you know, what we're kind of known for. So that's, you know, that's definitely interesting, you know, thinking about that.
Yeah.
And have a monthly. We don't have any, you know, that monthly setup. It's all just...
It's what everybody talks about. That's the home run, right? Some sort of a subscription model that it's sleeping income. I mean, you know you're going to get it no matter what until they cancel. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're delivering value, there should be no reason, you know, for them to cancel. I
just met with a gal up in the cities that runs the VP of marketing for this, I mean, very large firm and thousands of employees. And I just hit the CEO up and he's like, hey, I'm impressed with your stuff. Talk to this person, because I don't do that. I'm like, not fair. Met with her. It was good. They're already working. You know, they've had partners in the years, but I think we're going to try us out on something, which is great, because I always love going, I've seen what you're doing, and like, once you experience this, I think we'll be able to do more. But I just got to get them to give a shot. But she's like, I've done marketing in corporate America, and I've also done the agency work, and I've been doing this a long time. And she's like, because we were just BSing at the end, you know, what's going on? Like, I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about different ways I can grow this and advertising and distribution and things like that. And she's like, to be honest with you, like, you know, most people can figure out, you know, the advertising portion now and things like that. She's like, where the value is for a lot of us is in the content that we can't make.
Right. Yeah.
And we can't figure out how to bring it in-house. So, I mean, to that point, too, just having, like, this, these two options of, like, hey, do it yourself. We're going to teach you how. Or here's these staple videos that are going to really help you in different ways.
Well, and that's the thing too, is if you're doing all the research on what hits and you know how it all goes, then you also have the service sitting there waiting to say, all you have to do is shoot a little video like this. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll come up. It'll take us 1 hour. We're going to shoot this and this and this. We'll give you the content because we educated you on how to do it.
Yep.
You know, based on your subscription, and you go. You know,
yeah.
So, and then, you know, I mean, that could be a weekly thing. I mean, imagine if that something like that with these larger companies that want the content and want to kick it out as much as they possibly can. That's a big deal. I mean, there's a reason why the Gary V's of the world have their content management departments are bigger than all of their other departments combined. It's because it's you're in the attention getting world, right? I mean, that's why, and that's why he's nailed that concept down. You know, is he.
Attention is value these days.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a direct correlation.
I get you to watch, listen, see. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Well, first of all, Jeff, this has been sweet. Before we our cameras die and stuff like that, I do always like to ask people, just because we do have such this business following of people that are trying to push. You know, they could be entrepreneurs, owners, or aspiring. From what you've learned over the years, what have been some of those like key takeaways that have been successful to you that you could pass on?
I think the biggest thing, and I was kind of starting to talk about this relevant to the acquisition of the company, but the people inside of the company are everything, 100% everything. From the, you know, person that, like in our world, that is just sanding something and prepping it for paint, is as valuable as my general manager who's been there for 26 years. I mean, every position is crucial. Take that into your hiring decisions. Take that into your firing decisions. Those people are so valuable. I would also say when hiring and firing, or maybe not the firing side, but the hiring side, I always look at people at not where I'm hiring them. I want to hire them for the position I think they can get to. Mm-hmm. And they don't necessarily know their potential at that point when I'm hiring for that, but I always hire people with the road ahead of them. I just have to make sure as a business owner and my management team that there is road ahead of them to keep them there. Otherwise, they're going to fly the coop and go somewhere else because they weren't challenged enough, or, you know, they couldn't learn new skills or move up or anything like that. So, you know, don't discount the fact that you think you're hiring somebody to assemble something or do a menial task. You're not hiring for that position. You're hiring potentially for them to be something else. And there may be a plateau that they reach and they're happy at that plateau, and that's perfectly fine. But never, ever take them for granted of looking at them as something that is just that. Mm-hmm. Because especially too in a small, you know, a small manufacturing shop, is people move everywhere. I mean, we're almost trying to talk people out of not working with us half the time, because if they want to do widgets or they want to do the same thing over and over again, we 100% tell them, you might be doing this 1 hour and the next hour you're up in a boom truck 45 feet in the air and it's negative 30 degrees. Mm-hmm. So are you cool with that? I mean, that's the spectrum that we're at. It's not going to happen every day, but if you're not, don't come to work for us. Right. I mean, please just know that this is the job. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing to never say that's not my job and whatever. I mean, if you could ask any one person in our company if they're willing to help lift something or carry something or clean something or load something or go out and do something on the road, and 100% of them will say, you know, I can. I just That's have to awesome. make sure that, you know, I'm available and my other work is covered and, you know, whatever. But, the people are everything. And going back to the acquisition side of that, usually when somebody is selling their business, they don't give you access to their employees because they don't want to let the cat out of the bag that they're selling.
Right.
And that's a risk on both sides, right? That's a risk that if you back out as a buyer, they knew that you were selling, and then they're like, well, I don't know if I want to be with a new buyer.
Still.
I don't know if I want to stay here. Or I get in, and then they're like, I don't want to be a part of this. I'm out of here, type of a thing.
Yep.
So it's tough. It's very, very hard. You have to ask a ton of questions in that acquisition process to understand the length of service and why they're there and the culture. And I actually wrote into the Shad Tracy agreement, I paid a non-refundable deposit of a very, very large sum of money to meet with the three most influential people in that company because I wanted advocates when I went in day one. I didn't just walk in blind and say like, hey, I'm the new owner and here I am, you know, and everyone was, you know, the sole purpose, I had no intention of backing out. So I knew the money wasn't at risk. And it was very late in the process, but I 100% said I have to have at least three advocates on my team, you know, to do that. So you can pick who they are and you tell me the most influential people, and let's go do it. And those three people are my managers right now. They had no managers prior to me. Those three people are my top managers that I have, that I promoted when I got in. But, yeah, the people are 100% everything. And yeah, I don't want to end on this sad story, but, I promoted, a guy shortly in, he was a fabricator for us, and he ended up becoming our production manager over time. And maybe a year into being production manager, he came down with stage four cancer. And this is last November, and throughout basically 23, he was in and out of treatment and whatnot, and he's 27 years old. And now he's in hospice.
Dang.
So yeah, he, it's this most sad experience. I mean, it put my life really in perspective from what do I want to do? How long do I want to be, you know, working and all of it. I mean, everything has been kind of flipped upside down in 23 relevant to thinking like this kid is, you know, gonna have end of life and he'll be passing any day now, but yeah, those people are 100% everything, going back to that. And you never know what's going to happen with anybody. He's 100% a part of our family and always has been. And you know, would have continued his, you know, again, going back to the hiring thing, I hired him because I knew that he had a lot of potential as a kid, you know, when he was 23 years old or whatever. And then, you know, eventually, obviously this is his path, but, yeah, the people are everything inside the company. So,
then, yeah, I mean, it gives you a perspective to kind of reflect and look, you know, at what you want, what you're, you know, doing. To me too, like we're at a time where we're revisiting mission, vision, values of the company, and it's like, why? I don't want to just have this to have it. I don't want to just have this to make a buck. It's like, what's the purpose that we exist for? Why do we do these kinds of things? So that you can stand on those and feel like, man, like we are making a difference in different people's lives and what we're doing. And
right.
Yeah. You know, and something that people can rally behind on your team, you know,
give totally
them that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the last thing too, from, what we've been passionate about, is relevant to the customer voice and really trying to get feedback as much as possible about, what went right, what didn't go right, you know, things like that. But also, what experience that we don't even know that we aren't delivering that they've had that we can deliver to them. There's a book that I read. Well, I listen. I don't read to books. yeah, I'm an audiobook guy. But it's called Unreasonable Hospitality. I would highly recommend that book.
Okay.
It's out of the restaurant industry and kind of some of the things that they've done at fine restaurants to go over and above, but it just really gets you thinking like, that's such a simple thing that actually doesn't even cost any money that I could provide to the customer to make myself that much, make them feel that much more loved from the experience. So throughout 24, Mike and I are going to visit as many possible customers as we can to do a voice of customer with them. I mean, we're going to show their, you know, what we've done and, you know, some of their signage and whatnot. But really the mission is to listen and reset and take that back to the company and say, all right, 45 years, you know, here's where we are and here's what our customers are telling us. Let's set the pace,
move forward,
you know, for maybe not the next 45 years, but at least the next few years of here's what we really have to focus on to get better as, as a company. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's funny. We just did something similar where we're reflecting back and we're going, hey, what's going on? How's your experience? What can we do? And to us, it was like the process of the video was great. It was fun. It was easy. We loved that. The video itself was great. We loved it. Made us laugh, made us cry, motivated us, you know, whatever that was. But where we fell short was more like the after getting it out and the hype was, you know, everything's exciting, you know, a month later, it's like, well, what do we do with these, you know, videos and stuff like that? So now we're putting even our annual primary objective for 24 is client success and kind of that full circle of let's not forget about, you know, what they're doing and go, hey, how can you keep using this? What can you be doing? How can you, you know, so just really on like that, even the distribution side, because like we want it to be great all around. We don't want to hit three of the four, two out of three parts and then feel
right.
short. It's like, well, that's not our goal. Like, but it was also a blind spot until we started interviewing and going back and trying to figure that out.
Right. No. Well, and our video with you, that's exactly what you guys, we wanted you guys to do for us was the voice of customer type thing. So, yeah, I think it was a very big success.
Yeah. Well, sweet. Jeff, thank you again for coming on. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have.
That's absolutely.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think we could chat for another hour, but, you know, we got to keep rolling here. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good.
Excited for the next one.
Absolutely.
And as always, guys, thank you for tuning into this episode. I hope you learned something. As always, keep sharing this out. Send it to somebody you think it's going to help. And looking forward to the next one.